He covered the awkward motion with, "That is so amazing. You're just amazing. Could you have really killed one of those guys?"
"It doesn't matter if I could have or couldn't have. Attitude is what I'm talking about. I believed I could have, and they believed it. Attitude. See, that's the problem with guys like Chad. He wants to play like he's a big man, fakes it with silk suits and fancy cars. But he's had everything handed to him. Nothing but softballs all his life. All of a sudden, a situation comes around, and he doesn't know what to do. He can't pull together the frame of mind to handle things. He's got no
attitude."
Marcus nodded. Jay beamed, the teacher's pet. "That's why black people are better than white people. Black people have to work twice as long and twice as hard to get half as much. They didn't know somebody who knew somebody at some fraternity back at Ivy Leagueville. They didn't get the right introduction to the right guy at the right country club. All they did was work their ass off. So when you see a brother or a sister who's making it, you know they put in more to get there than the white guy sitting next to them. No offense."
"No, no."
Marcus's head shook in bemusement. "You always hear black people complaining, 'I can't make it. White people have everything. They got the power. If only I was white.'" A laugh now. "I'm glad I'm not white. I'm glad I'm different. I'm glad I have to fight for every scrap I can gather up. That doesn't hurt me. That just makes me stronger."
"I know what you mean."
Marcus looked at Jay, curious. Pretty much the first time he'd looked at Jay since the allocution had begun.
"What do you know? I mean, I'm cool with you and everything. As white people go, you're one of the good ones. But what do you know about being different?"
Jay hadn't meant to say anything just previously and didn't know what to say now. Words tumbled awkwardly like misshapen cubes in his mouth.
Come on.
Marcus twisted the key in the ignition, bringing the Audi's engine to life.
"We've got to hit Vegas."
Barstow was on the way to Las Vegas from Los Angeles. Barstow was on the way from Las Vegas to Los Angeles. Both cities, L.A. and L.V., had something to offer. Not much, and not much good, but something. Something more than the dirt and arid weather vegetation that surrounded Barstow. But for some reason, over both just about equidistant places, people chose to live in Barstow. Maybe they chose to. More likely, they were heading to one location or the other, broke down in Barstow and decided to stay there. Like how a bug that gets stuck decides to stay in a roach motel. A lot of gas stations in Barstow. Fast food places did well, too. The faster the better, as most people couldn't wait to be at either end of I-15. There were a few sit-down places where the person who took your food order wasn't talking at you through the busted speaker of a clown head. Not many. A few. And there was the trading post. The trading post got built back in the 40s, when just about the only thing to Barstow was the trading post. It did very well. People stopped at the trading post because if they didn't stop at the trading post and load up on gas, extra water, and food, there was a good chance they would break down just south toward L.A. or north toward Vegas, and once they broke down, there was an equally good chance they would not be found and would end up baking to death in the desert sun. Anyway, that's what the people who ran the trading post would tell you. A little piece of info that did wonders for business. So the post prospered over the years, with people buying overpriced gas and food and souvenirs and tchotchkes and knickknacks and postcards, greetings from Barstow. The rest of the city what little bit of city there was, grew around the trading post. By this day and age, there were other places to buy gas and food or get tchotchkes, knick-knacks, and purchase postcards. Greetings from downtown Barstow. But there was only one place where you could do all those things. The trading post. Paris sees the gremlin next to one of the trading post's pumps. By that much, he'd undazed enough along the drive to realize he needed to fill up. Once he started pumping, he dazed up again. Nearby, close to the bin where the complimentary squeegee sat in the dirty water, a crazy guy sang, "Raindrops keep falling on my head," into a plastic cup. He either didn't know or was too insane to remember the words, so he spiced up the lyrics with a few non sequiturs. Nutty as he was, he didn't rate so much as a look from Paris. After you've cradled the dead, guys singing into cups amount to little. Paris just kept up his from here to eternity blank-eyed stare, and it was only the overspill of gas onto his feet that jerked him from visions of shot-up bodies and screaming telephones and $1 million going from cash to ash back to real time. Barely at that. As he walked from the gremlin inside the log cabin building, aluminum covering drywall, to pay up, he zombied out again. Inside, something grabbed at Paris's nose, the greased-up smell of food cooking on a grill. It made Paris remember he was hungry. Past the gift shop, past the Western Union counter, was a restaurant. Katie's Country Kitchen, the sign said. Chairs and tables of polished oak that were supposed to make the joint look rustic. They made it look like somebody was too cheap to spend a little money and update the decor to one of any number of styles that had become popular in the post-Kennedy era. Paris wandered to the restaurant, slid into a booth, the vinyl seat and backing squealing under him. After a while, a waitress came around. 25 at most, dark hair that was long, dark eyes and brown skin. She could have been a lot of things, but in this part of the world, she was most likely Mexican. The name on her tag, Nina. Nina asked, "Need a menu?" "I filled up on number 4, I think." The visions that had plagued Paris since he'd hit the road were diminishing none. If anything, his weakness from hunger just made them all the more vivid and made it all the more impossible to concentrate. "Can I?" "I'll put it on your bill. You want that menu?" Nina was cute. Not quite beautiful, but very, very cute. Her waitress outfit, even though it was just brown polyester and white trim, with a zippered front that bifurcated her tits, and matching skirt that showed off her decent legs, just made her look the cuter. Something about a girl in uniform. Still, in his condition, a third eye wouldn't have gotten her the notice from Paris. She said, putting on the table the menu Paris hadn't gotten himself together enough to ask for, "Do you want to hear the specials?" Taking up most of the space behind the grill was Vic. A bull of a guy, crew-cut hair, biceps big enough to have Semper Fi tattooed across them in 48-point type. No matter that he was pushing 60. He chomped at a cigar while he cooked, with no regard to health codes. His white T-shirt, his T-shirt that was once white, looked to have been some kind of souvenir item. Stains of the food of the trading post, past to present. Vic had the tracheotomy voice to go with his size and look and cigar habit. He sent it growling after Nina.
"Nina, order up, let's go."
I give you a couple of minutes," she said. Nina backed away, watching Paris watch empty space. Damon was on the phone. Damon was angry. Angrier than he normally was, as an angry young black man.
I didn't send you out on no goddamn field trip, he screamed. I sent you out to do a goddamn job. Don't tell me you can't find a motherfucker. I ain't trying to hear you can't find a motherfucker.
Bryce was on his cell phone. Bryce didn't care Damon was angry.
You really need to do something about your language.
Bryce was driving her Lincoln Navigator. Like most everybody else who bought a sport ute, she didn't need the four-wheel drive or the ground clearance. What she dug was the way the vehicle rode high. Let her look down at all the rest of the traffic. Bryce got off on looking down at people. At Santa Monica and Highland, the light went red. Bryce slowed, stopped, but kept talking to Damon.
You normally talk like that, goddamn, motherfucker? Or is all the foul language just, I don't know, some kind of cool urban affectation?
Urban...
Damon didn't even make an attempt at the second word.
Fuck you! You like that language? Fuck you! Now why don't you do your job?
Bryce went very cold. The picket fence transmission did nothing to diminish the chill in her voice.
Don't tell me about my job. I do it. I do it very well. And don't you ever doubt it.
Damon got nervous. Just the sound of Bryce's eyes made him that way. On a couch across from Damon, one of the sundry and interchangeable girls he kept cooling watched him with a half smile. She'd never seen him squirm out of bed before, and she was digging it. Damon into the phone.
Aight, damn, just be cool.
I already killed one person, Bryce shot back. What do you want from my morning?
I want every motherfucker who has something to do with my shit getting stole open wide the fuck up.
Damon postured hard, trying to wipe the grin off his girl's face without actually having to get up and go slap it off.
You got that? I want people dead.
Bryce pushed herself back in the leather of the ute seat.
God, you get me so hot when you talk like that.
What?
Cars behind her honked, the light long since having gone red to green. Bryce didn't care. Bryce shifted to park, put a hand between her legs. To Damon.
Say it again. Say you want me to kill somebody.
She worked loose her fly.
Say you want me to open somebody up.
Across from Bryce, sitting at a bus stop bench, a young guy, 20s, with looks and a body. A guy who, same as a whole lot of other young guys, 20s, with looks and a body, most likely had come to L.A. with a lot of ideas about becoming an actor or a model, but, like a whole lot of other people with ideas in Hollywood, just ended up a guy sitting on a bus stop bench. Bryce gave him the eye, and some smile to go with him. After having every other plan in his entire life go away and leave him alone, it didn't take much for the guy to notice the drop-dead blonde in the sport ute giving him the come-on. The guy got up off the bench and swaggered for the navigator. Over the cell phone in her ear, Bryce heard Damon freaking out.
I ain't telling you shit, girl. You got problems, you know that? You are serious crazy.
As she unlocked the door for bus stop guy, as she hung up.
Oh, Damon, you don't know how tired I am of hearing people say that.
Crazy bitch,
Damon spat at the dial tone. Bus stop guy climbed up into the navigator, puffing his chest and with a weak delivery that explained why he failed as an actor.
Hey, babe, you want some of this?
Bryce's eyes made a circle in their sockets.
Just shut the door and fuck me.
Through an intense, concentrated effort that still required nearly one full hour of sustained application, Paris was somehow able to choke down half a plate of the food he'd been brought. Now cold and shuffled altogether, he couldn't even remember what he'd ordered, if he'd ordered anything. The girl, the waitress, may have just served him some whatever. The girl, the waitress, Nina, came back around. If she'd been around before in the last hour, a steel haze kept Paris from recalling. She said,
"How's everything?"
"How's everything?" People Paris knew were dead. People Paris didn't know wanted him dead. People Paris had never seen might be eagerly waiting just beyond the door to slip a bullet past his skull and into his brain. "How's everything?"
"Okay," Paris said.
"It's not much." Nina nodded at Paris's plate. "But since there's not much around here, it makes the food pretty darn good. Least it makes it seem that way." Paris made some kind of sound.
"You want any more fries or anything?"
"I'm all right." At another table, a woman who was in a hurry to get her bill so she could get back on the road to Las Vegas called at Nina.
"Excuse me, miss.
How about some apple pie?" Ignoring the woman, Nina kept on with Paris.
"You can't leave without trying a slice. Warm with ice cream, would you like that?"
Nina knew she'd never get over as sexy or a knockout. In a city like New York, she'd get buried under the everyday lovelies walking the avenues, who were themselves table scraps, scraped away by the even more stunning, the women who were beautiful for a living. But here in Barstow, she figured at the least she was very okay in the looks department. Very okay enough to rate a grab to the ass from every long hauler who thought getting frisky came with the price of a meal. So with that kind of history working for her, she wondered what it would take to earn as much as a solid glance from the distracted but pretty good-looking black guy she was serving. Paris started to say, "I don't really..."
"Miss!"
The in-a-hurry woman cut him off. From behind the grill, Vic got into things.
"Nina, you got customers, okay? Go do some work."
"Yeah, okay," she shouted back. "I heard you twice the first time."
Finishing up his check, Nina tore it from her pad and let it drift down to Paris.
You take care, all right?"
Paris didn't rejoin that. As she moved over to In a Hurry Woman, Nina watched Paris take up the check and start for the counter. Watching him go was like watching possibility leaving, just like possibilities had cut out on her so many times previously. Vic came around from the grill to the register. Vic seemed to run the show, and along with Nina was the only staff Katie's Country Kitchen had. The place could have used a little help, an extra waitress, someone who rang up while Vic cooked. But something about Vic said he was too cheap to hire out, and he'd rather pocket his dough than spread it around. Vic took Paris's bill, totaled it. Paris looked down at his thigh. There was a big, fat, once red, now brown, blood brain stain on his Levi's from when he'd cradled his former roommate. It was all that was left of Buddy. An unmissable blob that everyone had missed because it looked too much like a food spill, dried paint, or just a new wild design that the kids were wearing. Buddy was in death as he was in life. Anonymous.
$8.75, Vic said,
and said angry. Like with all the time Paris had wasted taking up space at the booth, he should have managed to chow a few more dollars worth of food.
$24.15 with the gas.
Paris fumbled a hand to his back pocket and broke out his wallet. The haze he was living in split open, and reality rushed in to fill the void. The wallet was empty. Paris didn't have any money. Quick, his hands patted himself down, but came back to report what he already knew. "You're broke."
"I don't have any money," Paris said to himself.
Excuse me?
I don't have any money, Paris said again, this time for Vic to hear.
You don't have any money? What is that? You don't have any money?
Paris remembered throwing clothes into the duffel with the tape, busting ass out of L.A.
I was in a hurry when I left. I don't have anything on me.
You got a credit card? You got a check?
I don't have...
You don't have any fucking money. Yeah, you said. You fill up your car, you eat my food, then you get wise, you don't have any dough.
I was in a hurry, I thought...
Vic wasn't even vaguely interested in what Paris thought.
You know something? I'm getting pretty sick of you people coming in here, taking me for what I got, then trying to play me.
I'm not trying to play you.
Well then, if you ain't playing with me, you better come up with some cash.
Vic's hands squeezed into fists. The flesh rubbing flesh made the same sound as twisting leather.
And you better come up with it quick.
The silent "or else" didn't need to be articulated. Paris hardly knew anybody, and knew even fewer somebodies who would jump up and get happy at the chance to be involved where lending money was concerned. The glare from Vic that rained down steady on him wasn't helping Paris come up with any new ideas on who might be eager to help him out of a tight spot.
There isn't anyone to get the money from.
Vic didn't say anything to that. Vic slid his hand behind the counter. It reappeared gripping a cut-down baseball bat. Chipped, battered, stains of red. The thing looked well used. Very well used. It was time. Paris had to give it a shot. Tried to tough it out on his own. But the wood of the bat twisting impatiently in Vic's hands explained to him real good how the situation was. It was time to make the call. Under Vic's very watchful, scornful eyes, which seemed to do their staring with that hunk of wood, Paris crossed over to the phone, picked it up, dialed 10 digits, starting off with the 714 area code. Somewhere in Irvine, a phone rang. A man picked it up.
Hello?
He asked into the receiver. In the background, across the wire, 1 hour or so away, as he listened without saying anything, Paris could hear the muted sounds of a ball game on TV. He could hear a lawnmower, one of the neighbors cutting grass. He could hear the noises of suburbia. They hurt, grating little reminders of a place Paris wanted to leave behind. Calling up his dad hurt, too, because, unlike every other time he'd called up his dad asking for a bailout, this time he hadn't wanted any help. This time he was cognizant of what a failure he'd become. The only thing that could hurt Paris more would be Vic connecting that bat to his head.
Hey,
Paris said into the phone. After a moment,
well...
was all his dad had to say back. Then for a long beat, there was nothing. Just the ball game. The lawnmower.
What's going on?
Paris asked of his dad.
Nothing special,
Paris's dad responded.
Kind of hot out.
Yeah, it's been hot.
Gonna be hot for a while.
It's that time of year, you know. Gets hot, stays hot.
They were like a pair of strangers, wallflowers doing an awkward slow dance with each other, only because they had to be with each other. But if there were anyone else for them to dance with, they would have parted company in a second. Paris's dad.
You know, it's funny, but I was reading somewhere about the other year when we had that El Nino effect, and the average temperature was... I think they had said it was something like 2 degrees cooler than normal. Now to me, it seemed...
From there, for Paris, his dad faded into a drone of minutia. Boring detail upon detail of little known and largely unasked for information that was substituted for real conversation. At any other time, Paris would have sat through it, same as he had always sat through it, any other time. But this time, he didn't have time. Let the begging begin. "Dad, I need money." It came out in a blurt. It was the only way the combo of embarrassment and urgency that Paris felt would let the words out. Paris's dad didn't say one thing or the other to Paris's request. The ball game and lawnmower did the only responding. Paris blurted once more, and for the record, "I need money, Dad." Not even thinking about the words he was saying. He was thinking about how, after he got out of this mess, nothing even remotely like it was ever going to happen again. He was living the ultimate example of what shortcutting got you, and from now on, it was shoulder to the grindstone and nose to the dirt, or however those hard work cliches went. Bottom line was, from here on out, it was the long and hard and backbreaking way around things. This, all of this, the being hunted and tormented by killer Hollywood agents, and being eyed as a piñata by some mid-desert redneck, all of it was just a wake-up call. Loud and harsh, sure, but when you've been asleep most of your life, you need a wake-up call that's... Something Paris's dad said jarred him back from future thought. What was that? Your mother and I just think... What did you... It can't go on like this, Paris. It just... What the fuck did you say? There's no need for that kind of... I said no.
No.
We don't... This can't keep happening.
He said no?
Every time there's... It's always something with you, son. We just can't continue constantly sending you money for every little thing. Well, this just made Paris want to laugh. It really did. Every other time, every other thing Paris had gone to them for, money to cover his credit card bills, a check to pay off AT&T, all of that Paris could have found a way around, but now... The one time he ever really, really needed their help. The last time he would need it. And here, Mom and Pop were giving him the brush off. Same as they would any of the cracked up beggars who accessorize the off ramps of L.A. You've got to learn to do things on your own, son. That's the way you have to look at this. It's not a punishment. It's a lesson. We're just trying to teach you a lesson. Paris looked over at Vic. Vic looked at Paris. He thwapped the bat in the beef of his palm. Vic was going to teach Paris all the lesson he needed. This was something we should have done a long time ago. You'll come to see that. What had happened? Had the air turned into some of that tarry goo that oozes up from the streets on one of those too hot LA days? Paris figured that had to be it. How else could you explain how difficult it was to breathe? What other explanation was there for his brain feeling like it had to drag each thought up out of the sloth? Dad, I need help. You have to learn to help yourself. You don't understand. You say that, but I was young once too. I'm in trouble. There's no trouble you can't handle if you believe in yourself. Paris's dad sounded like he'd just that afternoon graduated from the High School Coaches Institute of Motivational Speaking. Again, Vic thwapped the bat in his palm. The sound of it was like a plane crash. Dad, I'm gonna die. It may seem that way now, but later on, one day, you'll be glad we did this. You watch and see if you're not glad. Paris tried one last plea. It came off as a death rattle. Dad. I'll talk to you later. And I'll tell Mom you called. Goodbye, Paris. Goodbye. Paris couldn't recall ever hearing anything sound so permanent. Paris hung up the phone. Paris turned to Vic.
Paris said. There's a problem.
The look Vic gave Paris said, good. The bat came up from and back down into Vic's palm. Thwap. Mr. Bashir answered the ringing telephone.
24/7, Mart. How is it I may help you?
Mr. Bashir, is Paris.
Paris?
There was a whole lot of relief in Bashir's voice. Then there was a whole lot of anxiety.
Is everything all right? I am very much afraid for you. I think, perhaps, the trouble you are in is very, very serious.
A little laugh from Paris. No shit.
Yeah, I'm in kind of a squeeze here. I sort of took off a little short, you know? And then I remembered I didn't get my last paycheck.
Yes, yes, yes. I have it here. I will keep it safe until your return.
Well, that's the thing. I was hoping maybe you could wire me some money.
Hemming, hawing.
I kind of need it.
Where are you, my friend?
A place called the Trading Post, in Barstow. They've got a Western Union here.
Right, right. I will go to the nearest location and wire you the money as quickly as possible.
Paris's voice sailed ever so slightly on small, feeble wings of hope.
Thanks, Mr. Bashir. Thanks big. I owe you.
Paris hung up the phone. Paris said to Vic,
my old boss, he's sending the money.
Nina to Paris.
Why don't you have another Coke while you wait?
Vic clutched his bat, like he was afraid he might not get a chance to use it.
What's he gonna pay for it with?
Refills are free, Vic. At $2 a glass, they ought to be.
Paris smiled at Nina in appreciation of her being a stand-up girl, and in thanks for her jumping into things for him. Nina smiled back, happy she was starting to get noticed.
Just a heap under a blanket with a foot sticking out.
Bryce talking.
That's all it was the first time I ever saw a dead body. A heap under a blanket with a foot sticking out. Laying in the middle of Melrose. Who's that photographer? The guy who used to shoot all that old black and white stuff? A motorcycle and a half-bed had gotten it on. That's what had happened. A cycle and a pickup get it on, the pickup's all he's gonna win. So there was this guy, dead in the street, only he wasn't a guy, he was just a heap under a blanket, with a foot sticking out. And I'm standing there, looking at that, thinking, man, is that all being dead is? I didn't feel nothing. I didn't think nothing. What's there to think about a heap under a blanket? Ouija. He was the photographer. Bet you didn't think I'd know something like that. I'm not just tits and ass, Jackson. All his stuff was that kind of thing. Dead people, but not regular shots of dead people. Cool pictures. Bodies slumped over railings, half hid by garbage cans. Legs sticking out from under blankets, shit like that. Yeah, death wasn't so much. So I wanted to try it, see it close up. See for sure if it was nothing. I went home and took a rock to my dog's head. Beat the living hell out of it. Blood, brains, everywhere. My parents weren't too happy about it. They started in with the doctors and the therapists and all their question-asking and head-shrinking, like there was something wrong with me, like I had a problem, like... Anyway, my parents weren't too happy, but I kind of dug it. The dog and the rock and all that. Guess that's why I live the way I live now. You can kill anything you want and your parents can't say nothing about it. It's like running through the house with scissors in your hand. Your parents tell you not to, but it's the first thing you do when you get a pad of your own, isn't it? First thing I did anyway. In response to all that, the actor guy Bryce had picked up at the bus stop and was currently in the middle of screwing in the back of a Navigator,
lost in his abilities with sexual gratification, which were impressing only himself, said,
"How's that, baby? That good? Your man make you feel good?"
Bryce's phone rang. Bryce answered her ringing phone. Her trick tore himself away from his underwhelming cocksmanship long enough to say,
"Don't answer it, baby."
"Shut up,"
Bryce said back. Into the phone.
"Hello? Hello, Miss Lady? This is Mr. Bashir, the manager of the 24/7 Mart?"
Bryce rolled off the actor guy.
"Hey, Bashir, baby."
The actor guy groped for her.
"Hang up, I'm about to come."
No different than the way a snake strikes, Bryce's hand shot out. Backhanded actor guy across the face. Got a shocked whimper from him.
"I told you to shut up."
To Bashir, she was sweet as cherry pie.
"I was thinking of you. Were you thinking of me? Tell me you were thinking of me."
Yes. Yes, I was thinking of you. I wanted to call you and...
"I'm touching myself, Daddy."
"Are you touching yourself?"
No. As a matter of fact, I am not. You see, I wanted to tell you that I have received a call from Paris."
"I have to orgasm once a day. Did you know that?"
"I did not know that, no."
"At least once a day."
The actor whimpered some more, and Bryce threw him a look that slapped him quiet, even more than her hand had.
"That doesn't mean I have to get fucked once a day. It just means once a day I have to come."
"Miss Lady, please."
"Hell, if I had it my way, I'd never bother getting fucked. What do they say? It's not the dick I mind."
She bore a stare into actor guy.
"It's what it's attached to."
Actor guy sniveled, then quick put a stop to it, for fear of getting whapped again.
"To be honest, Bashir, I'm a do-it-yourself kind of girl."
The middle finger of her right hand slid inside her.
"Just the way you want it. Perfect, every time."
Her middle finger was joined by another.
"But you, Daddy, you could make me dig men all over again."
Paris.
Sweat trickled off the end of Bashir's nose.
"I received a call from Paris."
"I heard you. Poor Paris. Where is he?"
"In the city of Barstow. He requires that I send him some money."
"Well, don't do that, silly."
"But he needs...
If you send the money, he'll leave before I can go see him. And I want to see Paris badly."
Bryce sounded all sad and pathetic and unrefusable. Then she sounded excited.
"And as soon as I see him, I can come back and be with you."
"Be with..." "He said he was at a place called the Trading Post."
Mr. Bashir detailed things for Bryce. Anything to help get her to Barstow and back as quick as possible.
"You cannot help but find his car. A gremlin, do you know? Green."
"I'll see you soon, Daddy."
Bryce hung up the phone. Actor guy got dumped on his naked ass in the middle of Formosa. He sat, pants at his ankles, watching Bryce's navigator pull away, still whimpering. Mr. Bashir mouthed again Bryce's words.
"As soon as I see him, I can come back and be with you."
Again and again he said them, and each time they were as fresh as the moment he first heard them. A few deep breaths. Bashir lifted the phone, dialed. On the other end, a woman answered.
"Hello, Marta?"
Mr. Bashir said.
"Tell the children I love them. I will not be coming home again."
Damond,
answered his ringing phone.
Yeah, what?
Yeah, what? Bryce mocked. Is that at all polite? I don't see how you keep any customers with that kind of phone manner.
You crazy motherfucking bitch!
Bryce sibled into a hellion.
What did I tell you about calling me crazy? I? Damn, girl. Chill. You got something or you don't got something?
I got something. He's in Barstow. I'm on my way now.
How you know he ain't gonna roll?
He's ass out. He's not going anywhere. Drives a gremlin. Almost feel sorry for the kid.
You find him, girl. You find him and you whack him.
Bryce, playful.
Maybe. I'll see how I feel when I get there. How you... God damn it, bitch! I'm paying you to...
Damon got dial tone. He flung down his phone.
Crazy motherfucking bitch!
For a long minute, Damon did nothing but chew at the inside of his lip. Way across the room from him on the couch was a new set of girls. But they wasn't so new, they didn't know better than to disturb the silence. After that, Damon picked up the phone again. A cell phone. Even though there was a regular phone right there on his desk, Damon always used a cell phone, because cell phones were straight up hipper. As he dialed, Damon yelled at the girls.
What's your name?
One of the girls started to answer. Damon cut her off.
Not you, bitch. The big titty girl. What's your name?
Sharonda, the girl with the big tits said back.
Yeah, well, Sharonda, when I get off this here phone, I'm about to roll over there and get busy on your ass.
Sharonda shrugged. She leaned back in the couch and uncrossed her legs. Omar answered his ringing phone.
Zup, he said.
Omar, where you at?
Right off, Omar knew it was Damon.
Me and Kenny fitting to go to Roscoe's, get our grub on.
Oh no, damn that. You gonna do work. I want you and Kenny to get your asses to Barstow.
Barstow? Omar angled for the curb, pulled over.
That bitch Bryce found a punk that stole my shit.
What about Barstow?
Kenny asked at Omar. Omar waved him off, said to Damon,
so Bryce is on the job, let Bryce handle it.
I don't trust that hoe. I want you on her ass. I want you making sure she get the job done. Motherfucker driving a gremlin or some shit. Now you get on his ass What about Barstow?
Kenny asked again.
Omar.
Shut up, nigga.
Damon.
Motherfucker, what? Kenny, chief, I was talking to Kenny. You two just want to be gone, all right?
Omar worked up a nervous question.
Boss, what if, you know, Bryce don't do work? What if she don't do like she's supposed to?
Then
I want you to bust some Sears caps in that bitch's ass. I'm sick of motherfuckers playing me. She don't do right, then you open her ass up.
But it's Bryce.
I don't give a fuck if it's that used to be married to diehard bitch. She don't do right, she go down.
Omar got hung up on. One more time from Kenny.
What about Barstow?
I'll tell you what about Barstow. The shit's about to get hectic. Serious hectic.
Nothing yet, sorry.
The clerk at the Western Union desk wasn't sorry. What he was sick of Paris asking if any money had come through for him. A little guy, the clerk looked like he ought to be in high school, but in a town like Barstow, in a place where a fellow had few, if any, prospects, he was probably already working on his second wife and trying to figure out how to pay off his double-wired mobile home. The clerk said,
the clerk suggested very strongly to Paris.
Why don't you go back on over to the restaurant? I'll find you when your money comes in.
Paris wasn't making friends at the trading post. He shuffled from the clerk back toward Katie's country kitchen. Between the two points were the doors that opened to the outside, to the gremlin, that sat gassed up and ready to roll. He wasn't a track star, but Paris wondered just how fast he needed to be to bust through some doors to a car, fire it up, and hit the road before a fat bastard like Vic even huffed his first step in your direction. Paris's fingers fumbled at his pocket, at the gremlin's keys. He kept staring at the doors like they were speaking his name.
Hey!
Vic called at him for real.
Come here!
Paris did like told.
You ain't thinking of cutting out, are you?
No.
That what you're thinking?
No, I wasn't.
Vic was still gripping the cut-off bat. Paris was pretty sure he hadn't put it down since picking it up. It was like the bat had become a corrupt and controlling part of the big man, parasitically living off the hate he fed it. Vic.
Where's the money?
My old boss, he said he would send it. I don't know what happened. He promised he would send it.
Paris talked fast. Talked like his existence depended on how well he said what he said. If Vic didn't beat the life from him, it was just a matter of time if he couldn't get himself back on the road before the killer music agents shot it out of him.
Look, I swear I'll get the money to you. I swear to God. But I have to get out of here.
You people always think you can get something for nothing, don't you?
No.
Always think you got something coming to you.
Vic was in a place where he couldn't hear Paris. His ears were plugged up good with his own rants that went on firebrand strong, as if he was demagoguing to a raving mob of one.
People like me gotta work for a living, while people like you are out drinking and fucking from noon to night.
What are you talking about? Come on, man. It's not like that.
Don't you man me, boy. You're not gonna shuck and jive your way out of this.
You're crazy, you know that?
The bat began to twist in Vic's hands. Hipping Vic to his own craziness was probably not the smart thing to do. Too late did Paris tumble to that.
Leave him alone.
Nina got between Vic and the future target of his wrath.
I'll pay for him, okay? What is it, $20? Here.
Nina pulled cash from her change pocket and slapped it on the counter. Vic promptly snatched it up, crumpled the bill, and threw it back at the girl. It bounced off Nina's face.
You ain't paying for him. These freeloaders and welfare queens gotta learn a lesson.
Welfare queen,
Paris started. He got stopped when Vic's hand landed on his chest and grabbed up a bunch of his shirt. The shirt and Paris got yanked for the door.
You and me are going out back.
Vic was sweaty with vicious excitement. He couldn't have anticipated an orgasm with any more glee.
I'm taking my money out of you a penny at a time.
Jerking, twisting, Paris tried to break free. No go. Vic lifted the bat, ready to beat some submission into Paris, to beat some sense into Paris, for eating his food and pumping his gas and not having the dough to cover it. He lifted it to, after for so long holding in all his delicious rage, finally send the bat smashing, crashing, bashing down and even the score, for put upon white guys everywhere. There was no hiding from the blow, no dodging it. So fear and anguish sent Paris flying forward into Vic. His arms got wrapped around the big man as much as Vic's girth would allow. Together, the two as one sailed into tables. The force of impact sent the bat flying from Vic's hand. Women patrons screamed. Men tried to angle around for a better look. On the floor, Paris and Vic tussled, rolled, bowled over furniture, squished through spilled plates of food,
trying to gain advantage. Vic gained it very rapidly. For all the movement and violence, there was very little pugilism. Paris's fighting skills ended at accepting punches to the gut, knees to the groin, and repeated kicks to the head, all of which he did expertly. Beyond that, the only defense he could muster was to curl in a ball and suck up abuse, same as a black hole sucks light, until even that tactic was beaten from him. Paris's remaining maneuver was to lie on the tile and bleed. Immediately, and with great skill, he took to it. Vic rose, chest heaving. He retrieved his bat, the wood a welcome feeling back in his mitt. Over to Paris he lumbered. No words. Vic just raised the bat high, a two-handed grip, ready to get to what he'd been waiting much too long for, ready to rid the world of one more lazy, shiftless, no-good, freeloading black piece of... The sound could be heard through Katie's country kitchen, clear across the trading post, past the gift shop. Even the Western Union clerk jerked his head up. Not the sound of wood striking flesh, but of metal smacking skull. Vic went down, his body stretching out like a redneck blanket over Paris. Paris opened his eyes, looked up. Above him, gripping a stainless steel napkin dispenser that dangled hair and scalp, was Nina. The crowd of onlookers pressed in toward the epicenter of the action. Nina fanned the napkin dispenser before her. "Stay back!" The implied threat was the same as if she'd been waving a 45. She already, apparently, had the body count to back it up. "All of you, stay back!" The looky-loos planted themselves. Paris burrowed out from under Vic, dizzy from the beating, the one Vic had handed him, the one life kept handing him. He swayed to the waitress, and with her covering the two of them, the napkin dispenser liable to go off with the slightest provocation, they eased for the door. Nina stopped, back over to the cash register she went, punched open the drawer and cleaned it out, all the while the napkin dispenser keeping a vigilant eye, daring. "Come on, motherfuckers, start some shit." Nobody started anything. Nobody said anything. Nobody could believe what was happening. Paris, Nina, made the door. "You got wheels?" Nina asked. Paris stumbled for the gremlin, still parked by the pumps, fumbled the door open. Everything was happening too fast. Not fast enough for Nina. She shoved Paris behind the wheel, then ran around to the passenger's side. "Drive," she said. Managing the key into the ignition, Paris turned the engine over and bawled the jack out, keeping a heavy foot on the accelerator until the trading post was just a little something in the rearview mirror. Literally, Paris tried to shake his head clear. Nina, still clutching the napkin dispenser, bounced with excitement. "Oh man, do you believe that? That was great!" Bits and pieces of the recent past began to catch up with Paris. Vic. Vic with the bat. Vic getting clocked by Nina. Nina helping herself to some severance pay. He asked, "What did you do?" Still excited. "I've never done anything like that before." "What the hell did you do?" "I let him have it, that's what. I cracked him one good." She looked at the dispenser, still held firmly in her hand. "Oh, wow! There's blood on here. You don't think I killed him, do you?" "I didn't kill him." "Hard," Paris broke. The gremlin wigwagged side to side as its locked wheels rolled up on the soft shoulder. When the car had stopped moving, before that even, "Get out." "What are you?" "Get out of the car." "No." Paris threw open his door and came around to the passenger's side. That door got thrown open too. His hands shot for the girl. She got roughed from her seat.
Get out!
Nina's right hand dipped under the apron of her uniform and came out gripping a speed knife that she flipped open in a much-practiced move, bringing the tip of the modified Tonto blade to rest at a spot where Paris's chin met his neck. The jugular vein, they called it. Nina, to say the least, was upset.
I save you from getting your head beat in, and this is how you thank me? Huh? This is how you thank me?
Paris talked soft and quiet, like he was trying not to disturb a sleeping pit bull that might wake up and decide to rip his throat out.
Sorry.
They stood for a minute, the knife between them, Nina's hand on one end of the weapon and Paris's life on the other. On the road, cars passed without so much as slowing down. There was gambling to be done in Las Vegas, and a woman about to bleed a man on the side of the road wasn't hardly going to keep anyone from that. After a minute more, a lifetime for Paris, Nina folded down the blade into the titanium handle of the weapon and hid it back under her apron. Her look did a morph from angry to hurt. Paris tried to explain the situation.
I'm thankful you helped me, but right now I've got a lot of unpleasantness going on. A lot besides Leathernecks wanting to send my head out of the park. I'm telling you for your own good, you can't be with me. Well, I am. But you can't. And I can't go back to the trading post. And since your ass is the one I pulled out of the fire, you're the one who owes me.
There was quiet between them, except for the cars racing for the strip. Quiet. Nina looked at the barstow around her that Paris was going to leave her to. She said,
I should have let Vic kick the shit out of you.
Now Paris looked, saw what Nina saw. Nothing. A different kind of nothing than he had achieved in L.A. Paris's nothing back there was built up, glamorized with palm trees, sunshine, and big city living. But just below all that was a vapid vacuum of a hole, where nothing people lived nothing lives, that were set decorated with German cars, huge houses, and the best fake body parts money could buy, in order to approximate the most basal state of worthwhile being. The contrary between there and here was that Barstow wore its nothingness for all to see. It was too proud not to own up to all it wasn't. Get in the car, Paris said. Sarcastic. You're not going to grab me and throw me in? Just get in the car. Get in, get out, get in, get out. Nina was playful. Nina was happy. Nina was leaving Barstow. Her black knight had just ridden in on a rusting gremlin to save her. The two of them, Paris and Nina, drove for a while, stealing glances on occasion at each other, before Paris asked, So, what's the knife about?
Girl's got to protect herself. You saw the kind of people I deal with. Make working at the post office look like a good career move. You got a blade, you hit people with napkin holders. You violent?
Nina shrugged like she wasn't sure, but said,
No, the knife's for show mostly. I don't think I could ever stick anybody.
Paris wanted to know.
Why'd you do it? Why'd you help me? I'm not sure I did it to help you. Not in particular. It just happened. Vic was riding you. He tossed that money in my face, which really pissed me off good.
No shit, Paris threw in, underlining the obvious.
Next thing I know, I've got my hand wrapped around that napkin holder, and wham, I give it to him.
Nina looked behind her, out of the back of the gremlin, as if she was really trying to see all the way to the trading post.
God, I hope he's not dead. She paused a beat.
actually.
So then you figured, what the hell, let me just clean out the register so I can spend the rest of my life on the run?
No, that's not what I was thinking.
Nina spent a few seconds corralling her thoughts, trying to figure out, away from the heat of the moment, just what was going on in her head. She said,
my parents were illegals.
Paris stopped her right there.
Hey, you know what?
This is way more information than I really need, honest.
You asked.
I'm unasking.
I'm trying to tell you something. I'm trying to relate something to you.
Nina went all condescending schoolteacher with her voice.
Would you like to hear what I'm trying to relate?
In 2 minutes, I'm turning on the radio, even if you're only up to how your parents sold their first oranges together at an off-ramp.
Great. A black racist. I kill my white bigot boss over a black racist.
He's not dead. Just tell your story. Nina settled into her seat.
My parents were illegals. Long as I can remember, they were hiding out from the law, moving us around. I had a brother.
Hat? Nina didn't say anything to that, and Paris got the feeling nothing more would be said concerning the brother she used to have. Nina went on with,
they took any shit job they could find, where they didn't have to prove citizenship. And I always thought, what the hell? How bad could Mexico be that it's worth all this trouble to be someplace else?
This the part where they start selling oranges?
Fuck you. 3 years ago, I started working at the trading post, and for 3 years, I've been dying. It was killing me, inch by inch, day after day. It was choking the life out of me, like a rope around my throat. It took a while, but that place schooled me on why my parents put up with all the crap they swallowed over the years. They may not have had much, a little money and a little less hope, but that added up to a whole hell of a lot more than they had in Mexico. A chance, an opportunity. They added up to something. I don't know about you, but if I'm going to get the life choked out of me, I don't want to get choked dead for nothing.
A bug splattered against the windshield. Paris turned on the wipers, but it only made things worse.
Nina went on, took that napkin holder to the back of Vic's head, it was like all of a sudden I could breathe again. And when I grabbed that money, it was like I had one more chance to buy a life. One more chance to live for something instead of die for nothing.
Paris didn't have anything to add to the story, least of all a smart remark. Nina was right on, and his last 24 hours were witness to her testament. If you were going to take chances, take good ones. If you're going to die, die for something. They rode on for a bit more, quiet, but not stealing looks back and forth like before. By now, they had each other pretty well rated. After a while,
so where are we going anyway?
Vegas, Paris said.
Vegas, Nina repeated. That sounds about right.
Bryce was talking to the Western Union clerk. The Western Union clerk was smiling, like maybe he could get some from Bryce. Like maybe she was the one really hot-looking chick in the whole wide world who went for guys who looked too young for their age and were stuck in a job where a name tag was the chief tool of the trade. And while he was smiling, the clerk was responding to Bryce's query about a black guy named Paris, who should have been hanging around waiting for some money to get wired.
Yeah, he was here. There was some kind of a ruckus, and he took off.
Took off to where?
I don't know.
That wasn't the answer Bryce was looking for.
Well, you're just Mr. Fucking Helpful, aren't you? That ought to be your name, Mr. Fucking Helpful. Why don't you get that on your little name tag there? Get rid of, what does that say, Myron? Get rid of Myron and have them print up, Hi, my name is Mr. Fucking Helpful. How may I be fucking helpful to you? He drove a gremlin. It was green, beat up. Hey, Mr. Fucking Helpful, you're not. So shut up.
In response, the clerk blinked a lot, but said nothing. Bryce put on her thinking face. She thought. She thought. On the wall, just across from her, a map. Bryce stared at it. A tracker pondering the trail of an animal too stupid for thought, that moved on instinct. The map. She stared. She considered. Sure. That's where Paris was going. And why shouldn't she be going back there, too? Back to the place where Ned met Jude. The place where the three of them got John out of a jam. The place where, most recently, she handled a piece of business the night Tyson whooped Selden's ass. Gang-related, they had called it. The end result of an East Coast-West Coast rap war. No, it was none of that. What it was just a girl getting work done in that place. The Meadows. Las Vegas. Bryce took off for the door, for her navigator parked just outside. With his left hand, Omar furiously worked the steering wheel of his Lexus to stay close, but not too close, to Bryce's navigator, as it raced for the 15 North on-ramp. With his right hand, he dialed his cell phone. Next to Omar was Kenny, who just rode, which made Omar wonder how come it was he had to do all the work, while Kenny got to sit there not doing shit.